and she's written quite a bit about Jonathan Richman. Alex, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hi, Chris.
So, Jonathan Richman, what do you love about him?
That's a big question. sort of the two biggest things I would say is, number one, he's kind of this prophet of decency. He's just sort of right about everything, and he knows how to live, and he's got these very sort of simple insights in his music, just kind of brilliant. And in addition to that, he's also very much himself and very genuine. He just sort of seems to be every bit the character or the persona he comes across as on stage, which is rare and, you know, really nice to observe.
Yeah, I guess the first time I heard Jonathan Richman, and I think a lot of people have had the same experience, the first thing I thought is this has to be a gimmick. Like, this has to be some kind of an arch joke. But no, he's, like, just totally genuine and just is really satisfied writing about really happy things.
Yeah, absolutely. I had this when I was, I got into Jonathan in high school, and it was just perfect for me at the time, I guess. I just sort of fell in love with him. And he was playing like a three-night engagement at a club here in Toronto. And I had a zine at the time. So I went to go see if I could interview him. And he was very, very nice and, you know, sat down with me, this teenager. We ended up going out for dinner, him and his drummer, Tommy Larkins, and a couple of friends of mine. He's a little bit hard to talk to because he's so much sort of himself. And he's got these sort of topics that he'll talk about and other things that he'll just sort of sit politely through. But he was sort of like startlingly the same as the person who I kind of fantasized he'd be, which, I mean, how often does that happen?
So wait, when you say he has like the topics he sticks to, is it the kind of stuff that his songs are about? Like, is he just talking about like hanging out at the beach and driving nice cars and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, he just sort of like, he seems to really love the simple things in life, the simple joys. He's also very political. And not in a, you know, not in a didactic way. One line that sticks out, he said, he was talking about his vegetarianism, and he said something along the lines of, "I don't eat fishies because they're cute." Kind of gives you an indication of where he's coming from.
So I've asked you to put together a short list of just three songs, which is really hard given that Jonathan Richman's had, what, almost a 40-year career at this point?
Yeah. I guess Modern Lover's first album, I think it was 71.
Yeah.
So
he's had this career, and I've asked you to put together kind of three tracks that you really love from Jonathan Richman's canon to kind of lead us into a discussion about him. So what's the first one? What did you choose?
The first song, I'm going to play it safe here, and I'm going to say Roadrunner, the Modern Lovers hit. The thing about Roadrunner is it really sort of encapsulates this person that he was, or this sort of like character that he seemed to be, I think, at the start of his career. He was sort of playing punk rock, playing with kind of rebellious forms while sort of staying positive. It's sort of like rebelling without feeling like you have to get all messed up and act like a jerk. Again, like sort of like very innocent, kind of inclusive approach to being young and sort of a punk rocker and making the best out of one's youth.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Run, run, run.
Roadrunner by Jonathan Richman. Alex Malacco, what's your second pick? What's the second Jonathan Richman track you'd like to talk about?
The second one I'd like to talk about is called I'm Just Beginning to Live, and that's on his album Rockin' and Romance from, I believe, 1985. The song I'm Just Beginning to Live represents this very pure, you know, sense of joy, the sense of joy of being alive. you know, we all have moments where we feel that, but they're rare. You tend to lose that place when you're, you know, just going through the rigors of living a life. Jonathan Richman always seems to have that. And when you listen to a song like this, it kind of acts as a compass for that kind of pure, you know, happy feeling. Many songs that are about very sad things, you know, because he sings about his life, and if you follow his career, you really feel like you know him. But he sings about, you know, later on he would sing about his divorce to his first wife. He'd sing about his new wife when he got remarried. But a lot of the songs are quite sad. There's still this sense of joy and the sense that he still loves life, and he accepts these feelings of sadness and these feelings of melancholy and sort of relishes them.
Okay, Alex, so what is the third song on your very abbreviated Jonathan Richman playlist?
The third song's a kind of an odd choice. It's called Couples Must Fight, and it's from his album Her Mystery, Not of High Heels and Eyeshadow.
Oh, wow. I don't even think I know that one very well.
Came out in 2001, and this is sort of the third stage of his career, third or fourth, you could argue, where he had just sort of stripped down to basics and was just sort of touring with Tommy Larkins as his drummer. So the song like Couples Must Fight is kind of this Jonathan Richman standard in which he kind of dispenses these very simple insights, which sound sort of elementary, you know, as lyrics, but they're true. He's singing about how it's good for couples to have arguments and you've got to clear the air and it's really important for your relationship to do this. Again, it's not pedantic. It's just this very sort of, you know, he's just kind of lost in his own sentiment. There are times when you're angry or you're lonely or you're sad or what have you, and you're just kind of lost in these negative feelings. And, you know, you get this moment of clarity where you think, well, it'd actually be better to be philosophical about this and to act as kind and as generous as possible. And maybe if I let go of my pride, I'll feel better. And inevitably you do. It's just really hard to get back to those basics.
Alex, thank you so much for giving us your mini Jonathan Richman primer. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Chris.
Jonathan Richman is playing tonight in Champaign at the Canopy Club, and you can find a link to Alex's writing about Jonathan Richman on our website, will.illinois.edu. You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WYLL. I'm Chris Berube.
Support for WILL comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the standard all-wheel drive Subaru Outback with an EPA highway rating of 29 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at their showroom on Route 45 in Savoy or at SubaruofChampaign.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 27th of February, 2013. The birthday of the novelist John Steinbeck, Salinas, California, 1902. His most productive decade was the 1930s. He wrote the novel Tortilla Flat, set in Monterey, California, in dubious battle about fruit pickers on strike in a California valley, of Mice and Men, set on a ranch in Soledad, just southeast of Salinas, the story of the farm worker Lenny and his friend George, which was a big success and also a book which has been banned in many places. And then Grapes of Wrath came out in 1940, after which Steinbeck worked as a journalist in the 1940s, first as a war correspondent from the Mediterranean and North Africa in World War II. And after the war, he took trips to the Soviet Union, to Moscow, Kiev, Stalingrad, and out-of-the-way places in the Soviet Union, tried learning Russian, published his notes in 1948 in a book, A Russian Journal. East of Eden came out in 1952, and then Travels with Charlie, 1962. And in the same year, John Steinbeck won the Nobel Prize for Literature. When a reporter at a press conference asked if he thought he deserved it, he said, frankly, no. And afterwards, Steinbeck was worried about the effect of the Nobel Prize on him as a writer. He said, "I don't remember anyone doing any work after receiving the prize, except maybe George Bernard Shaw. The Nobel Prize has, in effect, amounted to an epitaph." And as it happened, John Steinbeck died 6 years later, not having published a book after winning the Nobel Prize. His masterpiece, The Grapes of Wrath, in which he wrote, "The cars of the migrant people crawled out of the side roads onto the great cross-country highway, and they took the migrant way to the west. And because they were lonely and perplexed, because they had all come from a place of sadness and worry and defeat, and because they were all going to a mysterious new place, a strange thing happened. The 20 families became one family. The children were the children of all. The loss of home became one loss, and the golden time in the West was one dream." John Steinbeck, who said, "The writer must believe that what he is doing is the most important thing in the world, and he must hold to this illusion even when he knows it is not true." Here's a poem for today, a poem by John Keats, "When I Have Fears That I May Cease to Be."